Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Jumping Monkeys would like to thank Cashfly for the bandwidth for this podcast. CACHEFLY.com. Cashfly. This is Jumping Monkeys with Megan Maroney and Leo Laporte. Episode 8 for July 28th, 2007. Practically perfect in every way. Jumping Monkeys is proudly brought to you by Audible.com for your free audiobook. Some great kids' books, too. Visit audible.com/monkeys. Welcome to Jumping Monkeys, the podcast where we explain parenting and help you understand parenting in the digital age. Maybe we just help ourselves understand parenting in the digital age. Megan Maroney, hello.
Hello, Leo Laporte.
I decided it's not enough to call the podcast Jumping Monkeys. I actually have to do it.
Release live monkeys in here.
Release the live monkeys. No, actually, I'm the monkey.
Yeah, he's bouncing on one of those exercise balls.
Well, this is the new, maybe he was teasing me or pulling my leg, but my trainer said that I should, instead of sitting in a desk chair, I should sit on one of those big bouncy rubber exercise balls you see in the gym.
It's good for your core.
Yeah. I'm exercising even as I podcast now. Do you find it a little distracting, though, that I swivel my hips while we're talking?
Absolutely find it distracting.
And then if I get a little excited, I start bouncing.
Yes.
Well, this is, when I went shopping for the exercise ball, I made a mistake and I got the ball for the large man. This is the 75 centimeter ball. And if you look at the instructions, it says you have to be, this is for like people who are 6 foot, like nine. So it's too big.
Yeah.
You notice I'm a little, I'm kind of lording it over you.
You kind of are. Yeah.
You know what I'm thinking? That maybe what I'll do is I'll get smaller balls for everybody else. And you could just sit on, you know, your little exercise balls and I'll be higher than everybody else.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
My mom has one that has big spikes all over it. Like they're rubber spikes.
What would that be for?
I don't know.
Traction?
I think it might be just like lying on it. And
Does she do her back with it?
Yeah. Massaging. Yeah.
Oh, that's neat.
But those are really good when you're pregnant. That's when I bought mine. And they tell you to bring it to the delivery room, which among the other things they tell you to bring to the delivery room, you didn't.
The miso soup I brought to the delivery room.
Yeah.
I read somewhere.
That you were supposed to bring.
Well, it was like a hippie book. And they said miso soup is good for delivering women. And I said, honey, I brought you this thermos of miso soup. And she practically threw it at me. She did not want the miso soup. Did you use the exercise ball?
No. Mm-mm, no, I did feel silly, like moving it, you know, around from room to room that we had to go to. But I did use it after the kids were born.
For stretching the back?
No, just holding them and bouncing on it. Like, you know, it's just another form of soothing a baby.
What a good idea.
I'm surprised I didn't enlist you to do that. I think you actually did come over.
I did some bouncing. We called it daddy magic when I was parenting
my
own.
You don't
even
need the ball.
I bounce. I'm naturally bouncy.
Mm-hmm.
And we also had, and every parent should get this, the you know, the little wireframe seat that it kind of has its natural bounce that they sit in.
Oh, the baby bouncer?
It's not like the one you hang in the doorway.
Yeah, no.
Which I think is illegal. I think it's outlawed now.
No, the walkers are outlawed.
The walkers, because you go down the stairs.
Because you walk down the stairs. Right. But the bouncers are not.
The bouncy chairs are great.
Yeah,
they're
bouncy
like
chairs.
Bungee chairs for children.
Yeah. The bouncy chairs, yeah, the wall things, the vibrating chairs. They're
all
good.
Don't you wish you had a bouncy chair that was adult size?
Yeah. Every child's toy, I wish I had. And like footy pajamas, that's the other thing.
Well, I have those. You don't have those?
Oh, yeah. No.
They make them for grown-ups.
No.
They don't have the little trap door in the back anymore.
Yeah.
Well, some of them do, but that's kind of for the kinky side. So this thing, it's a seat, and it has like, it's like, you know, you slide the cover onto this wire.
Uh-huh.
And the kid sits in it and it kind of jiggles naturally. But then this was the only way we could eat meals when Abby was born, was we'd put her in that. And one person would, with one hand while they're shoveling food as quickly in their mouth as possible, jiggle it.
Yeah.
Why does kids like to be jiggled so much?
Because they got jiggled in the womb.
Oh, it's just
because
like
walking
being,
around. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. No, they still have those.
Did you ever put your daughter or sons on the dryer?
Yes, we did the dryer. Or I would hold them and sit up there.
You would sit on the dryer with them.
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking.
Yeah. Yeah. We use all kinds of booby. But yeah, the ball was great because it's just easier than just walking around bouncing.
You know, this ties into your first link very well.
The baby toolkit.
The baby toolkit.
Yeah. This is an interesting site. It's a very pretty site, too. It's babytoolkit.blogspot.com.
A lot of places on Blogspot. Blogspot's turning out to be a really great medium for this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's easy. And yeah, I mean, it's this site is by Geek Parents, and they write about baby gear, and it's a pretty interesting site if you're a new parent, just because there is so much gear, as we just talked about.
Oh, it's all about the gear now. And yeah. I think that's generational. I think it's because our generation maybe maybe not my generation so much, but your generation is very materialistic. And it's all about the stuff.
Yeah.
That's my generation, too. Mm-hmm.
Well, my big thing about gear is, my big piece of advice is that you never know what sort of bouncing or swinging or vibrating that your child wants. So get it used. And don't buy this new
good
stuff.
Advice.
I mean, everybody buys this, you know, huge amount of plastic every
time
they have
so much
child
primary colored plastic that I just, and still.
Yeah.
Everywhere. Right. Legos, little pieces everywhere.
Right. And even if you're not like a joiner and you don't want to join a parents group or a mom's club, just join it for the stuff. Because what happens is when your kid grows out of it, you don't want to, like if you have a lot of time on your hands, you'll spend it like putting it up on Craigslist and selling it. But most people are just like, get this out of my house and I will drop it off for you and clean it for you.
Best thing we ever got. And you're getting to the age where this is a good thing. I'm big on stuff with batteries and power. Mm-mm. Waste of money.
Yeah.
Best thing we ever got for the kids. You probably had them when you were a kid. They're the cardboard bricks.
Oh, yeah. We have those.
They played more with those than anything we ever got.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. Marco's parents got us those for Christmas.
They're great.
For the boys, and they are great. Yeah. And
a lot of
people
forts.
People come and see them are like, oh, did you get those from work? Or like, no, they were a gift from, I guess just like, I don't know.
Yeah. Everybody has those at work.
You know, people don't know what we do.
You know, most podcasters have cardboard bricks.
Just because they're little cardboard boxes.
That's a good idea. Maybe I'll buy some. I remember Christmas Eve, because they come flat.
Right.
Folding and putting them together. Yeah. Best thing we ever, and we would stack them in the living room and they would constantly play with them. So even now with the 2-year-olds and the 4-year-olds, this is a...
Yeah. Because we have blocks, too, that actually were your blocks, and they were given
wooden
to us.
Blocks.
Yeah, we have your hand-me-down blocks.
Do they like blocks? Because our kids didn't really get into the block that much.
They love the blocks,
oh,
but
good.
Sometimes they love to throw the blocks
That's
at each other.
That's why the cardboard's good.
The cardboard is great.
Can't hurt anybody with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, baby toolkit.
So this would all be on... Everything that we're just talking about would be on this, probably, site.
Yes.
Oh, look, I just scrolled up. What did I see? Building blocks.
I was just thinking, I just saw those somewhere. And
that's the funniest thing.
I think that's they're the ones who refer to it as like, why do the bricks have bricks on them? Like that doesn't really make sense.
Somewhat inexplicable brick pattern printed on them. They're bricks made of mini bricks.
Yeah, ours don't have brick patterns. They're just normal cardboard boxes. And
I think they talk about how you can make your own in this, which is kind
of
neat.
Yeah, out of
old
orange juice.
Yeah, you know,
containers.
It's not that expensive.
No.
But I guess if you couldn't afford them. But look at all the different. So it actually there is expensive. Here's a 40-piece set for $30.
Bet you can get these hand-me-down too.
Yeah, yeah. They don't wear as well as the wooden bricks.
Yeah.
Did you get our cardboard bricks too?
Yeah, we have everything hand-me-down. We have your books. We have Abby's dresses. We have. I mean, I think we get a monthly installment of
our crap, all our old crap.
Oh, no, it's not crap.
It's a wonderful feeling, actually, to know that, because you know what? You fall in love with this stuff. Mm-hmm. These little shoes that Abby wore and these beautiful dresses, and I'll never forget them.
Yeah.
And to see Annabella wearing them is just wonderful.
Yeah.
It means that it's still, you know, it's still being used. And,
oh, yeah.
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 I think hand-me-downs is a great idea, as long as the kids don't mind.
Right. And then at my kids' age, they don't know. They don't care. So next, a few weeks ago, we talked about your family movie experience. You went to see the family film Hot Fuzz.
Not a family film. Not recommended.
Yeah. I did a little research into sites that you could go to.
If I had done a little research, I would have known better.
Yeah.
Let's see what they say on this site.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Familystyle.com. Yeah. Hot Fuzz. Well, see, right there, rated R for violent content, including some graphic images and language. That should have been a
right. The
a
rated
clue.
R. Do you understand the
profanity?
NBA
but see what that you know. You know what? When you have a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old, right. rated R it's doesn't fine. Necessarily mean it's not appropriate. You get rated R if you say the F word twice.
Yeah, exactly.
And the truth is, my kids have heard the F word.
Yeah.
Maybe from mom and dad once or twice.
Yeah.
So
no.
I mean, we don't encourage them to use it, but yeah. but I, that wouldn't alone be enough to keep me from going. To
no, yeah, yeah. I mean, this was these sites aren't necessarily for you at your stage. But if
well,
you wanted a family
this is good to
film,
know. I wish I'd seen this before I took them because they have a graph for profanity, extreme,
right?
Nudity, very little. Sex, brief. Sounds like my life. Violence, abundant and graphic. Drugs and alcohol, abundance. See, that would have been good to know all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, to know that, yeah.
And then there's more detail under the violence section. It says abundant, intense, graphic, beating, burning, bloody gore, explosions, shooting, stabbing, graphic comic drawing, Molotov cocktails, martial arts, hit in head with trash can and spray paint can, attack with axe, decapitation, and impaling.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't have gone to see that.
No.
It was specifically the impaling, I think, that finally put Jennifer over the edge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But and yet, and this is what gets me, look at the reviews.
Excellent. Yeah.
Excellent. Horrible movie, but excellent reviews.
Yeah. Kids in Mind is another similar site. It's a little more extensive.
I wish I'd known about this.
Yeah. Kids-in-mind.com.
And I think that these clearly also talk about different ages because, I mean, if they're rating 28 weeks later, the zombie flick.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't think of taking a 4-year-old to that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, because it's totally different. Yeah, for a 2 or 3-year-old, you know, it will also, those are also helpful for those.
Wow, this is actually quite detailed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that site has a lot more detail.
In fact,
scroll down.
I'm getting a little excited just reading it. Wow, look at this.
Yeah, most of them don't have that many paragraphs on violence, most movies.
No.
But Hot Fuzz, yes.
Well, no, this is 28 days later.
Oh.
Or months later. 28 F words. Two sexual... Somebody's sitting there counting.
Yeah.
That's what you got to wonder.
Someone's job.
Two sexual references, 16 scatological terms, 1 anatomical term, 1 mild obscenity, name-calling, 2 religious profanities, and 5 religious exclamations. And people drink wine with dinner. Now, that doesn't bother me, but some people that might bother, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think
do you
it's
ever
nice
wonder,
to know this.
Like, what rating they would put on your, like,
my
family life?
Well, let's see. Profanity, violence, gore. Yeah, we haven't had any impalings lately.
No impalings. No. Not since the summertime.
No. Speaking of no impalings, how about No Impact Man?
Yeah, have you heard of this guy?
No.
This is a dad he's trying to spend a year making
zero ecological impact.
Right. And yeah, he lives.
Not no in, impact in, on other humans.
Right. No, he's making a big impact on other humans, but just, yeah, so he's making his own yogurt, composting his own poop.
Oh, no. And he's living in New York City.
Yeah, with a 2-year-old, which is amazing. Yeah.
This is great.
It is really, really interesting. I mean, he just kind of, you know, he's just a liberal guy who just thought, you know, I talk, but I don't do, you know, I don't walk the walk. So I'm just going to see what it's like. And, you know, they ride their bike everywhere and they really just.
This is great.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
And he even says, look, you're not going to be able to do all this stuff.
Right.
You may not want to do all this stuff, but we have to do triage here. We have to fix the most important things first.
Right.
And he talks about what those are.
Yeah, there's just small things that you can do. And I think that's interesting. I've started washing my clothes always in cold water.
Do they get clean?
Clean enough.
Clean enough. Use all temperature.
No. But.
Because that's probably worse for the environment.
Yeah, no, but yeah. And I don't know. Yeah, I don't want to think about if they're clean
or not.
No,
that's a good idea.
But,
no, they're clean. Of course they're clean. You think the water being 90 degrees or 120 degrees makes it cleaner?
Right.
No.
I don't know. Someone maybe knows, but not me.
If that's not hot enough to sterilize it, it's not doing anything.
Right. Yeah. I'm also lowering carbon emissions by not flying anywhere.
I'd like to do that.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. I actually did just fly somewhere, but as a family, we can't fly with 5 people because it's too expensive. And
right.
So I like to think that's my little effect on the environment too.
I'd like to drive less. It's hard though, because life isn't arranged to do that. Now we're lucky. We live in a small town and we can in fact walk to a lot of places. Mm-hmm. I walk to work.
Yeah, me too.
And we, you know, a lot of people drive Priuses. I don't know how effective that is in terms of environmental. There's some question of whether that has much more impact on your conscience than on actually the environment.
Yeah.
And I use a bouncy ball for, and I think this is, you know, you're noticing it's a little hard for me to actually get comfortable on this.
Yeah,
thing.
You're moving around a lot, but I'm used to that. You know?
I feel like Mr. Bean.
Okay. That's noimpactman.typepad.
This is day one of the bouncy ball.
Yes.
You may never see this again.
I don't know if you'll get to day two.
No.
Noimpactman.typepad.com.
Good for him. I think that's a great story.
Okay, here's something interesting. Are you into Legos?
Still.
You are?
Well, oh, yeah, still. Hold on a second.
Henry calling you
again? I hear Debussy.
You always answer phone calls when it's your kid. And that's okay.
I don't know who it is. I'm going to silence it.
Don't answer it.
No. And I'm sorry I didn't turn that off.
That's okay. You can create a Lego mosaic of your child's photo. This is John Tolva's blog. It's ascentstage.com. And Lego allowed you to do this when he had his first kids. And then they stopped doing it or something. They stopped doing it, making it easily. When he had his newest child, he had to figure out how to do it himself. So he gives you this whole tutorial on how to
use
Photoshop.
Yeah.
So you use the filters on Photoshop and then you take it to the Lego store and pick them all out and make it. It's really pretty.
You know, I used a website that does this too. Let me just see if I can find it because it does something pretty comparable to this now, but then you have to figure out what tiles you're going to use and all that stuff, right?
Yeah. You have to. I guess there's some people that really do it just without using Photoshop.
Well, can you commission somebody to do it? I know I have a friend who does it in macaroni. And you could commission him to do it. So I bet you there are people you can commission.
MacaroniBabyPhotos.com,
maybe? Oh, let me tell you, this stuff is great. He had an exhibition of news anchors. And you've never seen anything until you've seen Dan Rather and Fusilli. I mean, it's just, it's a moving.
So it's not just all macaroni, it's all different pastas.
Oh, no, no. He uses a full palette of pastas. I'm still looking for this. Wait a minute. Now, you're gonna see how close this looks.
Oh.
See?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
did you actually do it?
Yeah, Typomatic.
Oh, so you have the picture, not... It's not... You don't
it takes a
have.
Picture, and then it will turn it into ASCII text.
Uh-huh.
Well, I guess this might not do the job for you, but it's something interesting. It's from typorganism.com, typeorganism.com, and it's called Typomatic.
So it's an ASCII...
Well, I'm looking now. Look at this thing of me.
It looks like Legos.
That looks like Legos. That's like the Gortons of Gloucester fishermen. It is. See, so it does it in ASCII, but it does it in other styles as well. I think you can choose. There it is. Black and white, color, letters or squares. So if you did color squares, here's Colin Powell in colored squares. That could be Lego.
Oh, yeah.
See, that's automatic. Yeah. So typeorganism.com/ASCII-O-Matic, or you can do it in Photoshop.
Moving on, I just thought this was kind of crazy. I found this some link I was following from something on Parent Hacks, I think. But it's an anti-roll crayon.
Oh, finally.
You've been waiting all your life.
See, the crayons roll right off the desk here.
I just think this is just one of those things where like was that really a problem?
I guess so.
It seemed that it was. I mean, because on Parent Hacks they had all these solutions for keeping crayons.
They do
from
tend
rolling.
To roll off, and then they break, which really is infuriating.
Yeah,
you don't want broken crayons. So these have some sort of.
I don't know. I think they're triangle shape or something. I don't know. But I don't know. Yes, our crayons roll. Yes, they break, and yes, life goes on.
These are extra strong.
What if we raised a generation of children who didn't have broken crayons?
This is like that thing we talked about last week, too much praise.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Crayons that don't roll.
Uh-huh.
Same thing.
We need a little,
Yeah, we need a little danger.
Rolling crayons.
A little danger in life. I don't think we should coddle our children with anti-rolling crayons.
No.
That's coddling them.
Exactly.
The heck with this.
Yeah, and they should have to start working when they're 9.
In the mills.
Yes.
We need more mills.
Yeah, or the coal mines. Okay, this is something interesting that I found on Slashdot.
First of all, you don't see a lot of parenting tips on Slashdot.
No, you don't. But this was someone who was asking, they said, you know, my child, I'm reading books to my child. I'm looking for new books because all of the heroes in my children's books are firemen or policemen or garbage men or some kind of, you know, blue collar jobs. And I can't even find any white collar job kids books, you know, or much less, you know, a book about a computer programmer. So yeah. I thought that was interesting that the responses are pretty typical from Slashdot.
Well, it's obviously a bunch of guys who don't have kids.
Right, exactly. But they're, you know, they're, one was, right now, why don't you work on stimulating her imagination rather than trying to help her understand what you do? There'll be plenty of time to talk about your boring job, no offense to her, later in life.
I like this one, Harold and the Purple Crayon.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good recommendation.
Yeah, that
He's
is
kind
a good
of a
book.
Geek.
What is he? I don't, did he have a job?
No, he's a kid. But, and by the way, his crayons, they rolled.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting because I was like, oh, children's books for geek parents. This is interesting. And then it was like, there weren't
they
very
just
many.
Mock. They just mock
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
How about Alvin's Secret Code? It's part of a larger series of books about a child inventor and also introduces kids to scientific topics. A Wrinkle in Time, of course. You must have read that. Madeline
Engel.
Oh, yeah. That was great. I read that to the kids.
The best kids' books aren't about adults. They're
Not about
kids.
The kids.
Yeah.
We don't really care what... I'll tell you, though. Wait a minute. There is a geek book written by Michael Chabon.
Oh.
Summerland.
I remember when
The father is the ultimate geek. He's an inventor. He's totally geeky.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, the kid is kind of embarrassed that his father is such a geek. They've got a flying car and... Oh, that's... You know what? Summerland is a bizarre book. And a great read for a kid about 9, 10, 11.
Yeah.
If you're still reading out loud to kids at that age.
Yeah, Michael Chabon, he wrote Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. He's a great writer.
He's a great writer. Wonder Boys. He's one of our best adult novelists who, I guess, had kids and decided, I want to write a kid's book.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I don't know if it got a lot of traction or attention, but I was such a fan of his that I bought the book. And Henry loved it. We read through it twice.
Yeah.
Because there's the kid plays baseball. And they live on this weird island. His dad's this inventor. And it becomes very phantasmagorical very quickly.
Mm.
And he saves the universe. And the dad is a hero. This is actually, I should actually post to this. Because this is the book that this person is looking for.
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. There, you know, I think that there are more and more books with geeks who are not negative stereotypes. And Bilbo. Let's not forget the original.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, what a geek.
Or, yeah, Harry Potter. I mean,
Harry Potter's a geek.
I guess maybe he was probably thinking of, like, really little kid books, which I can't think of.
When my daughter was 9 or 10, maybe 7 or 8, she got an interest in particle physics. And we read the George Gamow books, Mr. Tompkins.
Mm.
And they're kind of aimed at kids. They're not aimed at little kids. They're aimed at kids, maybe sixth graders. But she really enjoyed them. And then we read Flatland, which actually can be a fairy tale. It's really about geometry and life, what life would be like if we were two-dimensional, not three-dimensional. Yeah. But it's kind of a fairy tale, and she enjoyed those.
Yeah.
Mr. Tompkins in Wonderland is same idea of a guy who's in a relativistic universe that's kind of odd. So those are, I'm not sure I'd recommend them. They're read out loud books because you want to kind of, you know, every few pages she'd say, well, what if you fell in the black hole? And it's fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Yeah. For parents of really, really little kids. Like,
I don't know. Harold and the Purple Crayons for little kids. Yeah.
But one thing that we did with all of our kids is we just, when they were really little, mostly with Annabella, because she was bigger by the time when the boys were little, but we just read our own books that we were reading out loud.
Oh, yeah. They don't mind that.
No, they don't. I mean, they just like, it's just nice for them to hear words and they don't understand.
Right.
So whatever book we were just reading at the time, we'd read aloud to each other.
I think that's perfectly fine to do that.
Yeah. Or like read from whatever magazine you're reading, you know.
I read, my mom read when I was a little kid, read us The Hobbit.
Yeah, my dad read me The Hobbit.
And that was great. Mm-hmm. I think that was wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. We started The Hobbit with Annabella.
Well, and it's hard because when they're really little, a lot of it, there's a lot of long, you know, you leave out the Tom Bombadil or whatever it was, the long poems and things. But they kind of like it. They kind of dig it.
Yeah.
It's hard nowadays to compete. She didn't have to compete with the Lord of the Rings movies.
Right, mm-hmm.
And so she could read us this kind of stately, slow book.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't clamoring for an action sequence.
Right.
And I don't know how it would be today with kids.
Yeah.
Are you reading it to Anna?
Yeah, we started it.
What does she think?
She liked it, but it's not necessarily what she's choosing right now.
The good news is there's much better children's fiction as they get older than there ever was when we were kids.
Yeah. It's hard to remember, though, even books that you've read. We started reading Watership Down to her, and I was like, wow, this is a little violent.
Yeah. But it's kind of dark.
For a four-year-old.
It's a dark. It's got bunnies.
Yeah.
Dark bunnies.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what I thought. She likes bunnies.
She likes bunnies.
She liked bunnies.
It's not.
Until we read Watership Down. this next link, I really just wanted to mention because I wanted to say, show us your dirty wow-wow. Show us your dirty wow-wow.
Let's all say it together. Show us your dirty wow-wow.
Yeah, this is a
two book. Words. Lucky poop. It'll all make sense in a minute.
Yeah. This is a 10 Speed Press book that's about people's loved animals and, just the ones that have no eyes, no ears, no... You know, just dirty and
oh, you're
gross.
Old. You're old.
You're old, lovey.
Animal.
Yeah.
Oh, you're look at them.
Lovey. So yeah, they have a book just dedicated to these,
good
and then
Lord,
now they're having
of these
a contest.
Are really
yeah,
in bad shape.
That one looks like it's been burned.
I think somebody ate the face off this stuffed thing.
Yeah, Huck has a little bunny with no legs and most of the fur worn off
matter.
And no
you
eyes. And but I mean, you know, it's crazy. He's two. Like that's 2 years of damage to this bunny.
Oh,
like
yeah.
These are things that have lasted a lifetime. That's what.
Well, you know, Abby has Bear Bear. Mm-hmm. She probably is going to kill me for mentioning it. but my mom got it at in New York at the Museum of Modern Art before Abby was born. So she's had it her whole life. She still sleeps with it. And she'll probably take it to college. And it's in pretty good shape. You know, it's lost some stuffing, I think. So it's a little flaccid. But it's really sweet.
Yeah.
And I think you do get attached. Did you have a...
I had a blanket, which Annabella has now.
You're
my
kidding.
Snuggly blanket.
Mm-hmm. Oh, isn't that sweet?
Mm-hmm. It had many holes in it, but my mom sewed them up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll never forget my first copy of Playboy. And no, I don't have anything quite like... A stuffed animal. Did I even have stuffed animals?
I think you blocked that part out.
I think I had a stick. No, I don't. I must have had stuffed animals.
Sure
I literally don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can, you know, if you ever do remember, if you ever do recover that memory, you can take a picture of it
yeah,
and
put it on this
send
site.
It into 10 Speed Press.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
I just love seeing other people's beat up stuffed animals.
They're dirty wow wows.
Dirty wow wow. Yeah, this is the original dirty wow wow.
Oh yeah.
What is that? I ask you. Oh, it's a blankie.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they stink too. That's the other thing. I don't
do
know
they?
If you
well, you can't you can't wash them because
yeah,
they'll fall
some
apart.
Some of them are surface wash only. You hate that. I never buy
surface
any toys
wash
that are surface
only.
Wash only. Who that's does not, that? Who surface washes?
Surface wash. Oh yes, I'm giving a sponge bath to my dirty wow wow right
yeah.
now. This is, I love Shishi. Look at this one. Is she cute?
Oh, yeah.
But that's only 2 years old, see?
Yeah.
Ooh, this is creepy.
That one is. It looks like it's like Han Solo and stuck in.
46-year-old baby Thumbelina.
What's it stuck in?
Carbonite. That, this is typical of older dolls. The hair line, all the hair's been removed.
Yeah.
So all you see are the plugs where they put the hair in the plastic head.
Oh, yeah. Babies don't have, I guess some still.
Abby did that to a, we made the mistake of giving Abby expensive dolls when she was little. She was really into the American Girl dolls. Has Annabella discovered American Girls?
No, we've been keeping those from her.
Educational?
Yes.
They're yuppie gifts because the doll's $100 and you can't just buy the doll.
Mm-hmm.
You have to buy the Revolutionary War quill pen and desk set.
Right.
And the bonnet and the little bed warmer and the bed. You can actually spend $1,000 easy equipping this doll. And that's one doll from one era.
Right.
And every 20 years, there's another era and another doll.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is, it's kind of you feel good because there's, you know, they're multi-ethnic.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little black doll that I guess there's a, and they come with a book. So there's a whole story. And I think it was, you know, it's like the
Native American.
There's Native American. They had the, Underground Railway, and then there's history, you know, there's Revolutionary War, and there's even a modern one.
Oh,
and there's
really?
A flapper.
Like is there an 80s?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
American girl.
And she was into it, but what she would do is she, on the earlier ones that we got her, she'd cut the hair off. And well, I think she didn't know that it doesn't
grow back. Yeah.
But there's a happy ending to this story.
Mm-hmm.
I used a blowtorch and I melted it. No, the happy ending is that in Chicago,
you sold them on eBay for twice as much as you paid.
No,
for them.
It's the other way around. We actually bought an entire American Girl doll collection on eBay. I kid you not. But in Chicago, I don't know. I'm a bad dad because I kind of, as somebody who's kind of into acquiring these things, mm-hmm. I would actually think, oh, the kid wants this, and they don't really.
Yeah.
So I literally, it was like some kids, like six American Girl dolls and all the clothes and stuff. It was sweet. And Abby liked it, but I don't think it was too easy for her.
Yeah.
It all came at once. Yeah. She should have had a little bit. Anyway, we went to Chicago where the American Girl dolls started.
Uh-huh.
And they have the store and they have the museum. And they have a little restaurant where you bring your doll. So she went with her best friend and her best friend's dad and I. And they brought their dolls and they have little chairs for the doll at the table, a little teacup for the doll.
Aww.
And the doll sits there and you have tea with the doll. And then they have a hospital. And you bring the doll in, they put new hair plugs in. Good as new.
Were you the only dads there?
Yeah, it was probably mostly moms and grandmas. But it was fun. And then we went to the ball game.
Oh.
We went to, because that was the deal. We'll go to the doll store, but we want to go see the Cubs.
Uh-huh.
And the girls got tired of holding the dolls. So I have a picture of Barry and I sitting in the bleachers at Wrigley Field holding American Girl dolls while the kids are off eating cotton candy.
Yeah.
Memories, great memories.
Well,
you'll never forget them.
Pictures.
Yes.
This was something I wanted to discuss with you. It was an interesting article. About shutter lag.
Shutter lag.
This was in the New York Times. Most people know what shutter lag is. People complain about it to me too. I mean, I think some people, it's just a setting that they have their camera on, but
most cases, these less expensive point and shoots and compact cameras especially, you press the button, you wait, and then it takes a picture.
Right. And you're dealing with kids, it's too late. You missed it. So
or podcast hosts on rubber balls.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't catch us.
So basically, this New York Times article says, well, it's too geeky for you. You wouldn't understand anyway. And why they don't put them in the specs normally. But yet, that's everyone's complaint, you know, shutter lag.
This is a really good example of how stupid the technology industry is. The camera manufacturers don't publish this statistic. They say because you don't understand it. But you're right. Everybody understands it. And they are driven crazy by it.
Right. Well, they don't understand how it works, but if someone explained how it works, then they could maybe pick a better camera.
Right.
So that's what I was hoping you might do.
Here's what I recommend. There's a wonderful site called digitalcamerainfo.com where they do review all these cameras and they have very detailed specs, including shutter lag, not from the manufacturer, but they test it. The good news is newer cameras now are much faster. If you get a digital SLR, and I think they say this in the article, like a Nikon D40. They're instantaneous. They're like real cameras.
Yeah.
It's the less expensive compact cameras that are a little slower. The best advice is try before you buy. And now one thing people do get confused with the digital cameras, you do have to press it halfway down.
Right.
So it'll focus.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about that.
Right.
We're talking about what happens after you press it halfway down, then press it the rest of the way. It should take the picture instantly. If it doesn't, don't buy that camera, mm-hmm. especially if you've got kids or pets. Because, you'll miss the picture. You get a lot of pictures of the floor.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever use the setting where you just take continuous pictures?
I do. And that's great with kids.
Yeah.
But again, the more expensive cameras have more memory. They're faster. So this kind of motor wind mode works better.
Mm-hmm.
I have so many great pictures of Henry and Abby, say, on the swings. And it's the best way to get that perfect moment.
Right.
You'll have five or six images of them,
mm-hmm.
and there's one where that's just great.
Right, yeah.
And I highly recommend doing that. And now with digital cameras, there's no penalty for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You can take as many pictures as you want.
Right.
Yeah. So this, I'm glad they wrote this article. I wish they'd been a little more helpful in explaining, but at least it's something to be aware of. And before you buy a digital camera, you should try that. Press it halfway down, then aim it, then press it halfway down. But then you want to know how long between when I finish that button press and the time it takes a picture. It should be instant.
Right.
Anything less than that, you'll be unhappy.
Yeah. It's interesting because, they say that we're not trying to just get a camera with more megapixels now. It's the other
features. Well, they're all good enough now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I really do read other things besides the New York Times, but this next article also comes from the New York Times.
Okay.
And it was too good to pass up. It was the 5-second rule explored. Are you familiar with the 5-second rule?
Are you kidding? There are not just the 5-second rule. There are all, there are alternatives. There are subsidiaries. Oh, there is much more than just the 5-second rule.
So I'm speaking in particular of if anyone out there is not familiar with the 5-second rule.
Surely.
If you drop a piece of food on the ground, you have 5 seconds in which to pick it up and not worry about it having any germs on it at all.
Now, I have to be honest. This article comes out at least once every 5 years.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
No, this person's not the first person to investigate the science.
And they investigate it. And in fact, I've seen high school science projects on the 5-second rule. And guess what?
What?
It's dirty.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because really there is some truth behind the science.
Oh, really? That, you have time?
That there are going to be fewer germs on it.
Well, of course.
But, you know, it doesn't matter because only takes a few microbes to, yeah.
Oh, it's only 1 billion, not 10 billion. Okay.
Yes. And also matters the location where you drop it.
It says on surfaces that have been contaminated 8 hours earlier, slices of bologna and bread left for 5 seconds took up from 150 to 8,000 bacteria. Left for a full minute, 10 times more bacteria.
Mm.
Although wood's not so bad. It's the carpet that you really got to watch out for.
Yeah. So when my kids would drop Cheerios and then say, come back 4 or 5 days later to eat them.
Yeah.
What's your scientific?
Oh, well, in that case, they're dead. You know, there's, you could probably give me some insight into this. The Binky rule is the variation on the 5-second rule.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Your first child.
Right.
Child drops the pacifier.
You throw it in the garbage.
You throw it away. It's touched the ground. I can never use it again. Second child, you sterilize it. You wash it thoroughly. Mm-hmm. Third child, put it in your mouth. Lick it off. Give it back to the kid, right?
Yeah. And if you have twins, you don't even do that.
Just take the Binky back. It's your Binky. You pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
I'm going to do a little Google search on 5-second rule because I bet you there's an entire Wikipedia article. Oh, yeah.
Oh, there probably is.
Oh, yeah, there is. On the 5-second rule, I bet in which it will refer to a variance of the 5-second rule. Yes, look, there's overview, research, see also references and external links on the 5-second rule. In fact,
thank you, Wikipedia.
In 2004... The seminal work of Gillian Clark, a high school senior, won an Ig Nobel Prize for public health. She wanted to test the hypothesis, spread E. coli on both rough. I would stop right there with the spread E. coli thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough.
Yeah.
I don't want to know anymore.
Yeah.
Placed gummy bears and cookies on for various lengths of time. She found that 70% of women and 56% of men were familiar with the 5-second rule, and most did in fact use the rule, but women are more likely than men to use the rule, and cookies and candy are more likely to pick up than broccoli or cauliflower.
Men are more likely to, women are more likely to use the rule?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Men just look at it, fell, I don't want it.
Yeah. Yeah. That is interesting.
That happened to me at poker last night. I dropped a pretzel, did not eat it.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. No time.
That happened to me. Huck was sharing my sandwich today and dropped it on the ground outside, and I ate it.
Huh.
I wasn't going to make another sandwich.
Men,
but it was
more
out
than women.
On the cement, and I just feel
clean,
like that gets.
Oh, it's out of doors. It gets washed regularly.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they did this on MythBusters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And according to the MythBusters, time is not a factor. So I don't know if you're going to believe MythBusters or the New York Times.
The New York Times says it's not really, it's not a factor in making it hurt you less. I mean, there will be fewer germs, but it only takes a few too.
See also cooties. Yes, there's a Wikipedia article on cooties.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of a short article. So if you'd like to add to it, please go to wikipedia.com and, you know, contribute to this important effort.
Oh, Wikipedia. Marco, you know, who is a teacher.
He teaches.
Yeah, we had a long discussion about Wikipedia.
Does he allow?
No, but he has just disdain for it. In
disdain?
General, disdain. Wikipedia. He laughs in the face of a Wikipedia reference. And I just needed to discuss. Oh, yeah, I do too. And he does know. I convinced him. But we had a long. Yeah, because he's just like, it's.
He doesn't believe in the wisdom of crowds.
Yeah, I mean, he just thinks it's not. It's his issue is it's too easy for kids. It's too easy. It's like
welcome
the
to notes. The 21st century.
Right.
What do you want them to walk 2 miles to the library in the snow and do the research? It's the same information.
Well, not necessarily the same information. But my thing was that where do they get the information? There might be mistakes. His thing is, you know, if you read whatever you read, you kind of get an idea. Most things you kind of get an idea of what the slant is. If you're reading the New York Times or the New Republic or any, you know, you kind of get an idea of how it's slanted. Right. But Wikipedia, you don't know.
It could be slanted all sorts of ways.
Right. And that's the issue. But he came around and, you know, he no longer has just, I mean, I was trying to just tell him how fascinating it is as an experiment.
It all the time. You saw me just use it there.
Oh, yeah.
On cooties and 5-second rule.
Well, the reason why I had to actually discuss it with him, because he uses it too. You know, he uses it not for his history things, but just wanting to know things in general in his life. So,
right.
But yeah, I agree. It's not, I mean, he, it's not just Wikipedia. Like, he wants them to find first person sources.
And if I need to research the Israel-Palestine conflict, I might look at Wikipedia, but it's not the last place I would go.
But it is interesting. I mean, because this is, you know, kids are growing up with it, and it's just the first thing they think of to look for.
In many cases, I don't think it's any less accurate than the encyclopedia.
No, definitely not. I mean, you know, there are errors there, too.
Right. As we well know.
Yes. But,
they spelled my name wrong.
In the encyclopedia?
Yeah. They spelled it Disraeli. I don't understand. That's a bad joke.
They have, it was actually removed from my Wikipedia entry, but still in my IMDb entry that I was born
you
in
have
19.
An IMDb entry?
Oh, yeah, so do you.
You're such a movie star. What does it say? You were born
in 1972, when in actuality, I was born in 1973.
Let's not get that wrong.
Yes.
You know, it's funny because Amber is 1 year in her favor.
Oh, really?
And she hasn't bothered to.
Yeah.
Well, you're not supposed to change your entry.
No. I don't know about IMDb.
That's for others
Wikipedia.
To do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I changed my entry because it said I wrote an article for Hustler. And it wasn't Hustler. It was Jugs. And I thought it was important that that distinction be made.
And remember that time you paid me to change your entry? Oh.
that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to say, will somebody fix this?
Yeah.
I don't know who. I don't care who. Just not me.
No, you're supposed to go under the discussion area.
Oh,
that's what you're supposed to say. And, you know, this isn't correct.
Yeah, I'm not good at the
that's
Wikipedia.
That's what you're supposed
stuff.
To do.
Amazon's subscribe and save.
Have you heard of this?
No.
This, I've been using it regularly for several months. For items like, for example, diapers.
This is great.
Laundry detergent.
Oh, my gosh.
Other things. You get 15% off and free shipping. So, like, if you're going to buy one big box of diapers from Amazon, you're not going to get free shipping. You have to buy three big boxes of diapers to get free shipping normally.
Right.
But I, which I've done before, but now with only one child and or two children
in
diapers.
You use a lot of that.
So what you do is, it's just a regular, they charge your credit card monthly or, you know, every other month or every 6 months, whatever you choose. So they'll, there's tons of products, not all products, but a lot of things that you would need regularly. So I do it with diapers and laundry detergent. Diapers.
Coffee pods.
Yeah. So you say.
I'm going to sign up for coffee pods.
You should.
I go through those like diapers.
What is a coffee pod?
Oh, you don't know?
No, I don't drink coffee.
Okay. Well, it's something you make coffee with.
Oh, a pod?
Yeah.
Like an iPod?
No, it's kind of like a little puck with coffee grounds in it. Here, I'll show you.
What problem was this solved?
I can't get over there on the ball.
What happened to the coffee grounds?
Well, with the pod, you just dispose of the pod. And I'm not living lightly on the earth. Let's put it that way, okay?
So anyway, you sign up and you don't pay any. There's no fee for the subscribe
Look,
and save.
You could have Revlon Lip Glide sent to you automatically.
Yeah. And they charge your credit card and it comes and it's 15% off plus free shipping. And you can cancel any time. And they also send you an email. So, like,
I should really do this because there's some household stuff that you just, it's automatic, right?
Yeah. I mean, laundry detergent and
toilet paper, you need that. You're not, and that's a regular purchase.
Right. And for me,
they have seventh generation.
Yeah. I get the seventh generation
Good
laundry
stuff.
Detergent. Love it. If for me, it's like, then I don't have to worry about going to Costco or Target or other places where you buy a bunch of other stuff that you don't need, you know?
I'm showing Jennifer this because I wouldn't want to do this on my own recognizance, but I think if she agrees with
this. No, yeah, because she doesn't. I know she doesn't like the Costco. She's not a fan.
No. Well, but the thing is, this is good. So you'd have to, can you tell it the schedule?
You mean when?
How often you get it?
Yeah, once a month or twice a month or I think three times a month.
Oh, yeah, 1 month, 2 months. Oh, yeah, no, the small, most granular is monthly, it looks like. So you'd have to order enough for a month's supply. And then every month you'd get another one, or you can make it 2 months, 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, that makes sense because you don't want to have too much shipping. Now, I pay for Amazon Prime.
Oh, so everything's free.
$74 anyway. It's a good deal. If you order a lot of stuff, which I do,
mm-hmm.
everything is 2-day free shipping. So the only advantage. No, you save money on this
15% off too.
So there's no shipping and 15%. No, mm-hmm. you know, this is a great idea.
It's great. And there's no subscription fee, and you can cancel anytime. So if you only want to do it once, if you only want to get whatever it is that you're buying one time and you want 15% off and free shipping, you do it and then you can cancel it.
This is incredible. I'm definitely showing Jennifer this because, well, you know, I mean, this would save a lot of time.
More incredible than the anti-roll crayons?
Yes. Yes. This is the product of the week. I'm giving it the special award.
The special award. Yeah. I love it.
Now, why did you give Google Checkout a mention here, a shout out?
I just thought that was interesting. Yeah. Has it been around for a long time?
Yeah.
I just noticed it.
Yeah. It's been around for about a year.
A year?
Yeah.
Why did they tell me it was new?
Who told
you
it was new?
By they, I mean somebody on the internet.
Oh, it was in Wikipedia.
Okay, well, we can move on from that.
No, but it's it is something that I've wanted to get set up for. See, I'm a member. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to get set up for a Twit because some people resist or don't like the idea of contributing via PayPal, and I'd like to find an alternative. And there was some reason why I didn't. I think it's because you have to be a merchant or something like that.
Well, I just thought this was good for people who buy, like, you know, Toys R Us was on there and a lot of different, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it's for online shopping, and a lot of people are using it now.
Yeah, so you don't have to have a million different usernames and passwords. You just go to one. If it says Google Checkout, then you can just check out and it has all your information.
Do you worry about Google at all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because now they know everything you buy.
They know everything I search for, everything I buy, every email that anyone sends me. And
pretty much they got everything. They got you. You're narrowed down there.
What do they want from me, though?
Look, see, I even have a default payment method. And I've got, Call for Help, episode 382, 99 cents. That's the last thing I bought. July 18th, 2006.
Where did you buy it from?
Google.
You bought it on
what? From Google.
Oh.
Yeah, we have the show's available on Google. I don't know if it still is. It was. So look at all this stuff. Yeah, this is cool.
Yeah.
All these people. Okay.
So last week we talked about the Blogger's Choice Awards.
Did we win?
I don't think so, but I did a little more research into who does this, and I found out that it was put on by Pay Per Post. Are you familiar with the Pay Per Post?
Oh, these are use that word. I was going to call them sleaze bags.
Yeah, I was like, why can't they be more upfront about that? I mean, but it's my responsibility to look more into it. But I thought that was pretty interesting because Paper Post is the site where you can sign up and then they'll send you products and then you review them and you get paid. And you
idea being that your blog is going to convince people to buy this product because they don't really know that really it's just an advertisement.
Right, and they say that you can reveal on your blog that that you're being paid, but most people don't. Yeah, most people don't. And I just think that's weird. Is that really what blogging's come to? Like,
well,
I mean,
it's unfortunate.
I mean, if anyone, you know, wouldn't, if you ever said, I'm getting paid to write about this, even if you said, wouldn't then any other opinion you had sort of be called into question?
So don't vote for us on Paper Post. We don't want to win this.
Right. And then I don't know why they're doing, I don't know. I mean, this is obviously like, you know, a way to get lots of different bloggers to come there. And
it kind of legitimizes them.
Yeah.
Because and this is important to understand that just because you're a nominee doesn't mean you are a Paper Post blogger.
Right, no.
In fact, in most of these cases, they're not.
No. No, this is just who's putting it on, but someone nominated you, so it doesn't mean that you're...
I'm in here?
Yeah, someone nominated you as...
probably Paper
Post. Best
Sellout.
Podcast. Best podcast.
Oh, we're on here for podcasts.
Yeah, because last year I was going to nominate you for Hottest Daddy Blogger, just because I thought you deserved that award. Aww,
but I don't really talk about my kids or blog. Now I do, though. I could win now.
But then
except
I decided
for that word
to,
hot, which I don't really fit. But I do have a ball I'm bouncing on, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting hot in here from bouncing. Why don't we talk to our guest?
Okay.
We didn't mention that we have a guest.
We should have mentioned
that. Here we are 4 hours into the podcast, and we're not done. But before we do talk to Jennifer, let's, our guest, I do want to take a minute to mention Audible.com, our great sponsor. Audible is a great place for audiobooks. It's the place for audiobooks, and they have a whole kids and family and young adult section with stories for every age. And I'll tell you, if you can't read aloud to the kids, this is the next best thing. Megan and I both are big Audible fans. Every week we pick a book appropriate for kids or families. And I was just really pleased to see that Audible has Nancy Drew. I don't know if you read Nancy Drew. I didn't. My sister did. I read The Hardy Boys. But I'll tell you, the Secret of the Old Clock, Nancy Drew, number one, read out loud by, get this, Laura Linney. Now, this is a book. This will get any kid into reading again. And you're just going to love it. Let me just play a little bit of, this is Nancy Drew.
Mary went on. Judy's parents left very little money, but they were extremely bright people, and Judy is going to be like them. She ought to study music and dancing and have a college education, but I'm afraid we'll never be able to give her those things. Nancy said reassuringly, Judy may be able to win a scholarship or get other financial aid. Mary, finding Nancy a sympathetic listener, continued.
Isn't that great? Nancy Drew, read by Laura Linney, one of many appropriate, wonderful kids' books for all ages at audible.com, and you can get one free. That's right. Your first audiobook is free if you're not already a member. You get a credit towards a free book just by going to audible.com/monkeys and signing up. No obligation, no cost to you if you decide not to continue. Just cancel after the first before the first 2 weeks, and that's it. You still get to keep the book. That's one of the nice things I like about Audible is that the books are yours forever. You can download them anytime, which is really handy. I just have a whole my library with the hundreds of books I've ever read, and I can just download them again and listen again. You could burn them to CD to bring with you in the car. There are work on hundreds of different audio players, including, of course, all the iPods, including the iPhone, but also the Creative Zens and almost just about every kind of audio player. They have a whole device section. I am a big Audible fan. I think you will be too. A-U-D-I-B-L-E, audible.com/monkeys. We thank them for their support. All right, now who do we have on the line with us, Megan?
This is Jennifer Nestline, and she is the co-founder of Brainchild Magazine, which is my favorite parenting magazine. It's very different than most parenting magazines. It's just a lot of essays and just interesting things. Basically, their philosophy is that you know how to parent your child better than an expert. So it's not going to, you know, be five ways to soothe your baby kind of thing. And she just wrote a book called Practically Perfect in Every Way. And it's about her journey into self-help and beyond. Basically, she just did a bunch of experiments and, you know, wanted to read self-help about changing her body and changing her kid and changing her house and her, you know, finances. And it's just really, it's hilarious. I mean, you know, I love memoirs by moms, and this is that and something else. So I really wanted to get on and
just
talk to her.
Just the name.
Yeah.
Do you know where that comes from? Practically perfect
Mary
in every
Poppins?
Way. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
She is practically perfect in every way. Let's say hello to Jennifer Nestline.
Jennifer, your book came out May 17th, Practically Perfect in Every Way. I just finished reading it and loved it. It's really funny, Leo. Leo's reading it.
I'm reading it right now, actually.
Speak.
Yeah, because Megan hanged on to it the whole time.
I did. So it's about your year reading and taking loads and loads of self-help advice. So I guess I just wanted to start, without giving away the end, what was the most important thing you learned during this experiment?
Well, you know, I went into the project thinking about what self-help could do for me. It seemed like, you know, a good project for figuring out. The least I would get out of it, I thought, would be, well, the very least would be good stories. I thought...
And maybe mental health, you never
know.
Yeah,
yeah. And then, you know, and then I thought, hey, I will have written a book and have a clean house and, you know, all this stuff. But I came out of it wondering what self-help did to me, really. Mm-hmm. So I think part of what I learned was that it's a little bit dangerous to get so deep into yourself.
Well, especially if it's Dr. Laura who's giving you the advice, right?
Yeah.
You're not a fan of Dr. Laura, are you?
No, I'm not.
My wife's a psychotherapist, and she's not a fan of Dr. Laura, but she listens. And then at the end of every show, she comes and complains to me. Do you know what she said today?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I picked her up because I didn't go in thinking, oh, I'm a big fan, and I'm definitely going to groove on her stuff. But I had heard from people, you know, she's kind of a kick, and,
yeah,
you know, some of the things she says, have, you know, like everything, have bits of truth in them.
Of course.
So.
Yeah. It's tough love. That's what she specializes in.
Yeah, I think a lot of them do these days.
Yeah. So Dr. Laura, Dr. Phil, if you had to choose one, who would it be?
Oh, gosh.
That's a Hobbesian choice, isn't it? I don't know if I'd pick either of them.
I guess it depends.
Yeah, it sounded like, from reading it, it sounded like Dr. Phil was a little bit nicer to women than Dr. Laura is. I don't know if that...
But the question is, will I finish rich after I listen to either one of them? I love this email that you sent. David Bach's Smart Couples Finish Rich. He has other books like Smart Women Finish Rich and Start Late Finish Rich.
Oh, I know. It's a great like titled, you know, empire.
I think you should have called your book Practically Perfect in Every Way and Finish Rich.
That would be great. Well,
yeah, there's some money there. You know who's getting rich on that, Mr. Bach.
You know what he does, though? I swear to God, he like trademarks every...
Yeah.
When he sneezes, I bet he trademarked a two.
Yeah, because he doesn't want you to steal that.
Yeah.
That's mine. Yeah, I understand the feeling.
So you also wrote that you were a little embarrassed when people would see your self-help laying around when they came over. Did you overcome that embarrassment, or is that something you still feel if well, you don't have the books anymore, so?
Oh, no, I do. They're all up on a shelf, but they, I don't anymore. I just got used to it.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, in the beginning, because there's half the people I talked to, it seemed like their attitude about, you know, this project was, you know, oh, well, good luck shooting the fish in the barrel there. But, you know, they didn't really enjoy the, they didn't really believe in self-help to begin with.
Well, somebody does.
Well, and the other half of the people would pull me aside and say, listen, I got to show you this stack of books, or I have to show you this this one book that made such a difference in my life. So I think there are a lot of closet self-help fans.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it comes from a really good, noble impulse, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Leave a certain kind of peace in your life, so.
Yeah, I definitely felt like reading your book was a little bit like self-help. You were like the marriage books and everything, and you're going through it, and I'm like, oh, okay, she's okay, I'm okay. So thank you.
Well, that's good. I'm glad I could help.
So that people kind of get a better sense of your great, funny style of writing, maybe we could get her to read a little bit of the book.
Do you want? Oh, yeah, that would be great.
Do you have a passage that you particularly like, Jennifer?
There's this one where I decided to go to the bookstore to get some marriage manuals. And
I make that trip weekly.
So I'm gonna read the part where I'm at the bookstore. I'm pretty sure there's an FBI file on me then, says one cashier, a mild-looking woman in her early 20s. Can they do that to private citizens? It's the FBI, explains the other cashier. He's a pasty guy with unfortunate eyewear, and his excitement at being able to share his knowledge of governmental institutions and their legislated domains and purposes to this woman, this wild thing, this breaker of the law, is palpable. It's their job. They notice me, and I slide my Cosmo and Dr. Laura book toward the woman cashier. Really, she asks the guy? I thought it was just, you know, international suspects. That's CIA, he says. They continue chatting the transaction on autopilot. Then the atmosphere changes. Anyone could sense that the cashier has noticed exactly what I'm buying. So, ma'am, she says slowly, do you have a Barnes & Noble card? It's not so much what she says, but how she says it. Like I am perhaps the saddest person in the world, the woman who has somehow managed to reach her 30s and yet still failed to pick up on either old-school matron tips or the kinky stuff that men won't tell you. I do have a card, I say, and she instructs me again slowly how to run it through the machine. My ears are on fire as I slide back into my car. Damn it, I say. I buckle in. What do I care what they think? Why do I feel so ashamed? It dawns on me why. Because this is the shameful variety of self-help. While we Americans want to make ourselves better, we also love the idea of natural beauty, inherent genius, out-of-the-box charisma. Romance falls into the category of things we should just know how to do. I throw the car into drive and pull out of the lot. To make myself feel better, I think, FBI file my ass.
I love it. I love it. Very good.
That is great. Yeah. So since this is a parenting podcast, I'll get to the stuff you try to fix your marriage, your finances, your body, and your kid. And the kid chapter is really interesting because, I mean, the conclusions you come to at the end are just amazing, that you don't want to fix this kid who's his own thing. And
yeah.
I just really liked that, especially because, I mean, I've never really read self-help books, and I worked in a bookstore for a while. So, you know, I can, in my 20s, I can see myself. I never had an FBI file, but I can totally see myself in the position of that bookstore clerk. But, you know, as soon as I found out I was pregnant, I ran to the bookstore and just checked out
everything. It starts with what to expect when you're expecting,
everything.
And it's all downhill from
so
there.
So why do you think there's this element of people who even really don't buy self-help before they have babies, but once they find out they're going to be a parent, they just think they need someone else's help?
I think it's just such a singular experience, and there's not a lot of books in other genres about parenthood, or at least there wasn't when I was pregnant 8 years ago.
I think also we don't have our moms around like we used to.
That's a good point.
You don't have all of the advisors. We're kind of on our own more than we used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Did you Ferberize?
I did not.
Oh, you boy. If I ever meet Mr. Ferber, that's where you get the kid to go to sleep by letting them cry themselves to sleep, basically.
Now, that's also a big part of her kid chapter, was getting Caleb, who's 7, out of the bed. And
the family? You did the family bed?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you do need help. That's where you let the kid sleep with you for a while.
But for quite a while.
The while gets longer and longer. Pretty soon they're 18 years old, and you said, you know, it's either college or... Yeah. Yeah, I see you did Babywise, too.
Yeah. Well, I didn't really... I read through that. It's
so much... Isn't it... You know, come to think of it, there's a lot of this stuff for parents.
Oh, yeah.
There really is. It's, you know, if you just type in parent into, you know, the bookstore search engine, it'll come up with, I think it was something like 10,000 or 6,000 or some crazy amount of books that all, you know, is there to explain the mystery that is your child.
Yeah.
Not that they do, but necessarily. There is actually, you know, a lot of good information.
Right. So,
but you can't really separate it from the opinion that comes, you know?
No. Yeah, it's difficult because you have the, you know, what to do when the child has a fever. I mean, even that, you know, if women, just moms and dads, trusted their instincts more, I think they wouldn't necessarily need a book. But I definitely have all of them. You talk about the Dr. Sears, which you thought was going to be your ally in the whole co-sleeping thing, but even he was... had different opinions to yours.
I'm trying to remember Dr. Sears. I thought
he's good, right? Big co-sleeper. Yeah,
he's the guy.
He's
yeah,
great.
Mr. I mean, co-sleeper.
He is. He's Mr. You know, attachment parenting.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
A lot of his philosophies sort of dovetail with what my natural parenting style is.
Right. But after you meet Dr. Sears, you have to meet Dr. Ferber. That's the problem.
You know, I think Dr. Ferber has actually, you know, softened a bit on his stance.
Oh, yeah, a little late for me. My daughter's 15. She's still crying.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, what you said about Dr. Sears and attachment parenting is that it was a result of just this dogma of the doctors and the medical institution, but then attachment parenting became its own dogma. And mm-hmm. I was thinking about now there's this huge amount of sites on the internet that are parent to parent advice sites, just, you know, message boards and things like that. And I'm wondering if you think that's going to be the new dogma, that people still, moms are still not trusting their own instincts. They're still going somewhere else on the web to find advice.
You know, Stephanie Wilkinson, my partner at Brainchild, we were just talking about this, whether or not this, you know, mother to mother stuff, if it increases judgment or not. You know, because on one hand, you have a lot more outlets to find information and find support. But on the other hand, you have that many more people who are potentially judging, you know, what your decisions are.
Right, yeah. I think, you know, the philosophy behind Brainchild, I think, is mothers know their kids better than experts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's really your own kid, not, you know, someone who's on the same message board as you are.
Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting.
But we don't, and I think this is the self-help culture. We don't trust ourselves.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's kind of the culture we're in, is the expert, at least in my age group and demographic, we do everything with experts. It's baby boomers, right? Mm-hmm. So we have experts in every, you know, somebody's running my finances, or somebody running, you know, I have to go to a trainer. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to parenting, I've got to have an expert. I can't do this myself.
Right.
Who's the expert?
I think part of it is that everything is put so much on the individual that the stakes are so high that you feel like you need somebody, you know, to double check against. You know, like with your finances, if you just tried to your retirement on your own, you'd be, you know, probably in trouble.
Here comes the Alpo.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about your chapter on the home, specifically the fly lady.
Mm-hmm. Now,
Leo, do you know who the fly lady is?
No, I must have missed that. Which chapter is that? I've got to find out.
That's the chapter on the home.
Does she get rid of flies?
No, the fly lady, well, Jennifer, you are the expert. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the fly lady?
Fly stands for finally loving yourself.
Oh, I don't. So that would never work for me.
Well, okay. You haven't done her program yet.
Obviously not, yeah.
It's a decluttering program, and it's very thorough. You get about 15 emails a day.
What? That's clutter in and of itself.
You know, reminding you to do different things. Like one of them is you run around your house and pick up, I think it's 21 items that are clutter, and put them in a bag and throw them away.
Oh, see, Jennifer wants this. We've actually hired people to do this.
She's probably heard of the fly lady.
She must have.
Jennifer,
I mean, we have a local fly lady. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's confusing, isn't it? My Jennifer.
No, I got it. But.
Yeah. Okay. My Jennifer.
I've tried. I believe it's 27 things, because this is the only fly lady advice that I've taken. And
why that number? Why not 14 things?
I think because it's just...
a magic number.
Yeah.
I don't think I could find 27. Well, maybe I could.
You could find 27 things. <Yeah. there. laughs>
I see 27 things in this square inch of my desk.
But yeah, one of my favorite lines of yours, Jennifer, in the book was she's talking about how she came upon the fly lady in different message boards. And people, her line was, she's mentioned in a sheepish way the way one might admit a sexual attraction to Dick Cheney.
It's a shameful love, but I have it. I think I've just kind of finally given up. Well, you know, Megan, you're sitting here. I've given up.
Yeah.
No fly lady here. I can't. You know, it bothers me that I'm so cluttered. But we're all cluttered.
Mm-hmm.
That's the message I get from the fly lady. If there a fly lady exists, we must all have this problem.
So what did you learn from the fly lady?
Well, you know, she actually worked for me. I applied her methods, and I had you'll notice I say, a completely clutter-free first floor of my home.
About the second floor?
I did not get to that because I reached a point of exhaustion before I could embark on that. It's insane to have a family and also do these things, especially if nobody else is as interested in it as you are.
That's what Jennifer says.
I mean, I think before the fly lady, we had sort of a nice equilibrium, my husband and I. Not that we always both cleaned up, but we could tolerate the same level of mess. And then after the fly lady, when I became much more interested in it, it just messed up the equilibrium, I think. We've come back to it, I think.
I figure we'll have a tidy house when we're 60 and the kids are gone. How do you have a tidy house with kids?
Yeah. Well, you know, you can hire.
Hire.
Yeah.
A lot of people I know, they have a, cleaning person come in, and what that does is basically forces them to pick up all the stuff the night before.
To clean before they come in. My cleaning person comes in and makes piles. That's all she does. She makes piles of stuff. And it's basically shifting one pile to another pile. So every time I have to look for the DVD because it's in a new pile.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. I don't think it's decluttering so much as making new piles.
Right. Yeah, our babysitter takes care of our kids. I never asked her to clean anything. I just didn't think that was part of what she needed to do. But the kids nap for 2 hours, and she
there's nothing to do then.
The living room, and I was just like, you know, you don't have to do that.
You don't have to do that.
And she's like, I can't stand to sit in here.
Good for her.
I do it because she's a total clean freak, and it's hilarious because she just, you know, I mean, I know she does it because she knows that I like it too. But yeah, mainly she just couldn't stand our clutter.
Yeah, I asked my sister, who's also very neat, one time, you know, what do you think when you go to other people's houses? Like, I try not to be judgmental, but I'll notice the stack of papers and I'll think, what's wrong with them? Why don't they have a filing system?
Yeah. So you have a blog. How long have you been blogging?
Since about mid-February, so about 3 months.
So was this something that you came to because of your book, or had you been wanting to do a blog for a while? Or
I mostly came to it because of my book.
Yeah, someone forced you online.
She just got in the habit of writing and couldn't stop.
Yes.
How do you like it so far?
You know, I do like it. It has helped me actually clarify my thoughts about the book. You know, in preparation for interviews and stuff.
Right.
And you know, I don't get a whole lot of comments, but you know, my mom and my aunt seem to love it. No, I think I do have more readers than them.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I read it and I don't comment.
I'm just taking the quiz that will help no one right now, and this is good stuff here.
Oh yeah.
8-year-old hilarious. Boy or stereotypical cranky old man, take the challenged. When pressed with dinner says, "Peas? Who told you I wanted peas?" I've heard that exact sentence. I'm not going to read more, but I do like the, that's just two words, lucky poop. All we need to say.
If you want to know more, it's
practicallyperfectbook.blogspot.com.
That's how I'll go down in history.
So do you read other mom blogs?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah. What blogs do you read?
Let's see. I read everything that's on the list there. So I go through my. I read
your blog roll.
Yes.
Yeah.
Breedeman Weep, which is by Jennifer Mattern, who's the.
Is it Breedeman Weep or Breedeman Weep?
Breedeman.
I love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
she's up in Massachusetts and yeah, Western Massachusetts and. We've published her on Brainchild before, and she's just a fabulous writer. And, you know, I read everybody in the whole circle probably reads, you know, Deuce and Thin Slippy and Fussy.
Those are the names that keep coming up on this podcast, that's for sure.
Now, those are the popular girls.
Having never read any of these, I'm starting to know now their names.
Yeah.
I don't know if dads read things like Deuce.
Oh, yeah. I bet they do.
Do you think?
I mean, she has so many readers that can't be just...
It's got to be some dads.
Moms, yeah.
We know, by the way, from recent stats that there are more women on the net than there are men.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I believe that, totally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as the proportion of porn has gone... No, I'm just kidding.
No, it has. I just saw that stat, too. There's less porn on the net than before.
Yeah. Less porn, more mommy blogs.
Well, actually, we shouldn't say less porn. There's probably more porn, but there's the proportion, as you said, of porn has gone down.
Right.
Which means there's more other stuff.
Uh-huh. So, now, Brainchild is my favorite magazine, and I'm not just saying it because
you
started it. But
is it a print magazine,
yes,
too?
Yes, it's a print magazine.
Okay.
Yeah. And I found it, I don't even know how I found it, by some web search and in a desperate moment where I had like stacks of Parent magazine and Child magazine and American Baby and all kinds of things that were absolutely no help to me. And it's just...
This looks hipper.
Oh, it's...
Smarter.
It's different from those magazines because it's not an advice magazine. Jennifer, why don't you tell people who have never heard of it?
Yeah, it's sometimes hard to describe without describing what it's not, but it's not a service magazine. You know, not that there's anything wrong with them, it's just not that. There's mostly personal essays by mothers and the occasional father. There's in-depth reported features, news column, fiction, humor, book reviews. It's
and no articles by Dr. Ferber. Not a one. I like Mommies of the Serengeti, though. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, that was nice. It's an essay by this woman who was not really a joiner, and she was sort of afraid of these, you know, mothers groups. And I think, I don't know, I could identify with that, especially when my son was younger. But I think in the end, I thought it was a neat twist because it turns out that, you know, she does like that community.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you hear a lot about, oh, how horrible these Mommy and Me groups are. And, you know, sometimes they are, but I think motherhood sometimes opens you up in unexpected ways.
Right.
And that's one of the ways it did for her.
Yeah, I did really like the ending then. She takes what works for her. They really want her to have a birthday party, I think, for her little boy, and she does. And
that's cute.
Ends up giving out Band-Aids as her goodie bag.
You also have debates, which I think is interesting. The debate between, for instance, have we taken play safety too far? And you have both sides. I like that idea, too.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's interesting to look at the more sort of the extreme arguments on both ends of a given issue, because I think most people fall in the middle. It's not easy to necessarily find writers for that. Because most people are like, yeah, I could see, you know, both sides. And I was trying to drum up some writers for a debate one time, and somebody wrote back and said, no, because when I read that debate, I tend to agree strongly with both sides. So
that's me. I can't. It's fun. Yeah. I read one article and go, she's right. I mean, the other, no, she's right. Yeah.
Yeah. There was an interesting one, I think probably over a year ago, about whether or not you should read your child's email.
Oh,
yes.
Interesting. Ah. And do you? I guess your 4-year-old doesn't get a lot of email.
He's 8 or 9, right?
He's 8 and a half, yeah.
He doesn't get an email yet either.
No, not yet.
No. But you will face that soon. I do not read my children's email. I could if I want to. And I make sure they know that.
And if they're listening right now.
I could if I want. You know, it's interesting because Abby gets her email through her school, has an email address, and she prefers to use that. And she knows perfectly well that they're reading her email.
Yeah, they can all read it, yeah.
And I think it's interesting that she chooses to use that, although she did just tell me the other day she has 4 Gmail addresses, so. Maybe I don't read all her email.
So Caleb is your 8-and-a-half-year-old, and does he use the computer?
He does. Just playing on, you know, different sites. And one day before school, he was looking. He wanted a Nintendo DS, and we said that, you know, we weren't just going to get him one. So he was up on eBay looking for him.
Oh, this is what I don't like about kids today. They do research.
Yes.
They present arguments. Both my kids, they'll go, because it's all available on the net. And they'll present prices, arguments.
Right.
My daughter wants to get her nose pierced. There's no way I'm letting my 15-year-old daughter get her nose pierced. But she has a PowerPoint presentation. You think I'm joking. A PowerPoint presentation on why she should be allowed to get her nose pierced, including things like, in some cultures, it's, you know, and I'm proud, in a way, you want to kind of encourage that, because, wow, she really, but I'm not going to encourage it to that degree, that I'll actually let her do it. But it's pretty amazing. Kids today, I tell you.
So do you use any parental control software for him, or are you just sort of?
Not yet, because we're usually up there.
Yeah.
When he's doing it. I think as he gets a little older, we'll look into that more.
Two words. Lucky poop. Oh, I'm sorry. That's a different part of the interview. Never mind. I'm still stuck there. I'm guessing that was the 8-year-old boy. I'm just guessing.
Wow. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much.
Thank you for
coming on. I really appreciate it. And
I want to read this magazine. I'm kind of want to. Maybe I'll have some more kids just so I can subscribe.
Well, you should. Jennifer would like it.
She would love this.
I would.
Am I Jennifer too?
Now I'm getting confused.
No, Jennifer would like. Now you're going on a book tour. Are you excited about that?
Oh, definitely.
You're going to go all over, like 24 cities in 4 days?
Well, I think like 10 in a couple weeks.
When I used to do a radio show where I'd interview book authors, because we're in San Francisco, we'd always get up at the end. So they'd be like zombies. And they've heard the same question. And, you know, the publicist will give you the questions, which I never would read. Because by that time, they've heard that question 20 times. And it's just the worst interview. So I wish you luck.
San Francisco, I think, is my, after, it, you know, I'm doing my home where I live in Charlottesville, Virginia, New York. And then I think San Francisco is my first
one. Oh, good. Oh, yeah. Good. You'll love that.
So Charlotte, watch out. But
And then are you doing readings, too, so people could find out about those readings?
Yeah, definitely. They're all on my website. The whole tour schedule is on there.
Excellent.
And that's practically perfect.
And yep. Is your husband staying home with your son?
Well, part of it he is. Part of it we're going together while my son goes to Disney World with his grandparents.
Nice.
Yes. And,
so you have learned something from this self-help stuff.
And then some of them he's going with me with my mom.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
I once took my daughter to an appearance, and she was about that age, and it baffled her. She couldn't understand what these people were there in line for.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end she said, "So I don't understand. You're signing a piece of paper for them, and they want this." And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Why don't you give them a vial of your spit?" I said, "Well, I don't think they'd really want that."
Some people would. Later.
Nice. Oh, I'm selling myself short. Of course they would. It's great to talk to you, Jennifer. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you,
Jennifer Nielsen. Practically perfect in every way. Available at better bookstores everywhere, and of course online at Amazon.com, where you're rising through the ranks. How often do you check your Amazon ranking?
I don't do it that often
yet. You will. It's a bad habit, believe me.
Oh, somebody told me that you can get a little thing to put on your desktop.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There used to be a website I should check and see if, called Jungle. What was it called? I can't remember, but it would track it for you and make graphs.
Ooh.
Bad habit. Bad habit. Just, I warn you against it. No, I think you're going to have a hit. It's a wonderful, very funny book. And in my 5 minutes of reading it, I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And we've enjoyed talking to you. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
And that was Jennifer Nestline. The book, again, Practically Perfect in Every Way. Who publishes that fine volume? You've got it right there in front of you.
This fine volume. Putnam.
Putnam.
Mm-hmm. Putnam.
Look for her in your community
soon. Yeah, it was just on May 17th. Published.
That's great.
Yeah, it was fun to talk to her.
Well, it was fun to talk to you. I love this podcast. I'm really enjoying it. I hope you are too. Please let us know what you think. And you can either post a comment on the podcast at twit.tv or send us an email.
You can send it to Megan at twit.tv.
That would work.
Yeah.
Don't send it to me because I'm famous. I don't read my emails. Actually, I do. But I don't want anybody to know it. And we'll see you next time. On Bouncing Monkeys.
It's Jumping Monkeys.
Bouncing Monkeys. Look how high I can bounce. Whoa!
Watch the ceiling.